Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I'm glad you didn't call your dog Ruby.
Oh, I know. I meet a lot of Rubies. I do, and they're all...
You shout that in a North London playground, you get trampled in a rush. I think you were responsible. There's a whole...
We were. The year after, it was the top girl's name. Sorry about that.
Isn't...
This week on Walking the Dog, I went for a stroll with Kaiser Chiefs frontman Ricky Wilson. Ricky doesn't live too far from me in North London, so he turned up at my house, 15 minutes early, may I say, most punctual rock star ever, with his absolutely huge and totally fabulous labradoodle, Redis. Ricky's brilliant company for a dog walk. He'll chat about everything. So we did, from his childhood in Leeds, to his success with Kaiser Chiefs and the ingenious songwriting formula they came up with to ensure success. We also discussed his crossover into TV, which included a triumphant stint on The Voice, and the thing that seems to make him happiest, his relationship with his partner Grace. Okay, and you, Redis. Ricky also does a podcast with the legendary Tony Blackburn. It's called Ricky and Tony Pop Detectives, and I thoroughly recommend you give it a listen. They explore all sorts of pop-related urban myths, and it's a total joy, so do check it out. I loved my walk with Ricky and Redis, and I hope you do too. Let's hear from the man himself. Here's Ricky and Redis.
Ricky, have you got poo bags?
I have.
Okay, we've got the poo bags. We've got our rock legend.
And we've got Redis.
Come on. Good boy. Right, should we go up and then down?
Yeah.
And then through that playing field that no one seems to know about.
I go to that playing field all the time,
It was
Ricky.
Really good during lockdown when you weren't supposed to let them off the leash.
Although there were lots of youths having get-togethers with cider. And I found myself turning into the sort of Coronation Street old bag.
Do you know there's meant to be a pandemic?
Yeah, but you, I don't mind. Youth can do whatever they want as long as they tidy up.
Is that your next album?
Yeah, well, it's a good title. Merry Kaiser Chiefs.
It's very kind of you.
So, yeah, walking the dog.
Well, I should say, you might have got the clue already by the mention of Kaiser Chiefs, that I'm with someone very exciting.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do this boy for a while, and I finally got him. I'm with Ricky Wilson from the Kaiser Chiefs. And this is a bit of a first, because he came to my house.
I did. Sorry about that.
We're sort of in the same kind of manner in North London, aren't we?
Yeah, but not only that, there's been lockdown and the opportunity to do something face-to-face, one thing, but to be able to go there, you know, and it's round the corner and you can take your dog is amazing.
Well, you've got your dog.
Yes.
Can you introduce us to your dog?
This is Redis. He's 4.5 years old. He's a labradoodle. But looks more like a poodle.
He's huge.
He's quite big and he's got a bit fat. He was just staying at Vince and Lorraine's. That's his mother and father-in-law. And has toast for breakfast when he's there. So he's got quite big.
Well, I'm carrying Raymond, but I promise this won't be the whole way.
Well, I'm going to let him off the lead in a moment.
Yes, and I will do the same to Raymond because Raymond tends to do a lot of sniffing.
Oh, he's only got into sniffing recently.
Oh, really?
And he's only just learnt to cock his leg.
Oh, really?
I know, we're all very proud of him.
I don't want to shame you, Ricky, but Raymond did that very early on.
Well,
I mean, it's...
Well, I think he just, because his legs are so long, I don't think he thought he needed to.
I know, it's not such a stretch for Raymond. So how long have you been in North London? We'll keep it vague, because I don't like a burglar's guide.
Well, no, that's fine. I've been in North London, I lived in Primrose Hill for years.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. And I felt like I was in a Disney film. And then all the celebrities started disappearing. So I thought, where are they all going? And it turns out they're all going to Crouch End. So I just followed them. Because that's what we do. Oh, there he is. Look, he's cocking his leg. Very high. Too high, to be honest, readers.
That was like Stephen Merchant cocking his leg.
No. Well done, readers. I've been in London probably about 12 years.
Yeah.
And in North London, around here, about 6, I reckon.
But this isn't where you're from originally, obviously.
No, I'm from Leeds.
Yeah.
The London of the North.
Well, I'm going to have to pick him up till we get there, because this will just go on all day.
Really? Does he mark everything?
He marks everything. It's small man syndrome.
He thinks he's a small man, Reedus.
Reedus is having a nice sniff of Ray's wee there. Do you think they'll get on, Ricky?
Of course. He gets on with everybody.
Will the height be a challenge?
No. Come on.
Were you what I call a dog family?
We had a dog, yes. Tish. Tish was an Alsatian cross with something else and lived quite old, probably about 15. And I had a cat as well. I'm not really a cat person.
You're not?
No, I liked ours, but I think that's the case with most things, isn't it? You do make a distinction very early on whether you're a cat or a dog person. And
what do you think the difference is? Apart from the obvious.
I don't know. I think that... I don't know, to be honest. I haven't really thought about it. I just think you know. Thank you. Crossed. I just think you just get a sense for it, you know.
I think dogs are more like your best friend, and cats are like those mates that you see occasionally.
Mm.
But you wouldn't call a cat if you had a trauma.
Well, maybe I'm more like a cat then. So that's why I like. Oh, sorry, because I'm a bad friend. I don't have many, but the ones I do have will testify to the fact that I'm not a contactor.
Are you not?
No.
What do you mean by bad friend?
You know, I'm not that proactive.
Yeah.
I like people, but, you know, lockdown's been really good for me, because it's been a little bit like the way I'd like my life to be.
Does your other half, does she tend to take care of the friendship?
Yeah, she's got lots and lots of friends and very proactive, which is really good. I think that you just... Oh, there's a car coming. Come on, Reese. There's a, you know, like...
Well, it's a taxi. Who'd get a taxi to the park? I would.
To school, maybe. Readers, be careful now.
You see, Ricky, that's how I expected you to turn off in a black cab or a limo.
Did you? Oh, well, yeah. I'm quite a miser, to be honest. I'm a miser chief. I don't really like spending money. Which is good. I don't even like to know how much money I've got. My mortgage advisor ticked me off the other day because he said that I should really know how much money I have and where it is.
Yeah.
And then, because he asked me about paying the deposit on the new house, and I said, I don't know, Brian. And he goes, you really should know these things. Do you know, I was asked to do an article for, I think it might have been the Times, recently about, money.
Hmm.
And I read the questions and I thought, who would do this?
What sort of questions was it?
How much do you earn? What do you spend your money on? Have you got any investments? Stuff like that. I thought, I like doing interviews when I've got something to sell, but not that much.
Are you sure it wasn't the tax people sending?
Yeah, well, you do get like one of those emails you get from Apple saying you owe them money, and then you realise it's spelt wrong. What's he doing?
I mean, Raymond!
I think a dog with a name beginning with R is a good thing.
Do you think so?
Mm. You know, guide dogs, they have to begin with a hard-sounding letter like a K.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Call him, Ricky. I think he might listen to a male voice.
Grace always tells me off for doing my reader's voice when he's in trouble.
What's the reader's voice when he's in trouble?
I don't want to do it because he's not in trouble.
Oh, okay.
We'll have to wait. Okay. But I'll point it out. You'll know when you hear it. It's the same as my dad's voice when I was in trouble. Look at the readers. He's just looking at Raymond like, come on, what are we doing?
Do you have readers on the bed?
Of course we do. But he's kind of... There's been a tipping point recently. He's getting grown up.
Mm.
And he does take himself off to bed at some point. He'll like just
skulk off
and he goes to his bed, which is under, you know, as you go in under the stairs.
Yeah.
He's got a bed under there and he just goes off to there.
Ricky, call Ray.
Is it Raymond or Ray?
Yeah, either is fine. Whatever.
Raymond! No, nothing.
What's that dog?
I don't know, some Yorkshire terrier thing.
You should know Yorkshire.
Well, it doesn't mean I know everything about Yorkshire. That's why I left. They drummed me out. I've done so many interviews this week with BBC World Service this morning,
yeah.
Talk Sport, all about Leeds going into the Premiership. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm excited for them, and it's good for us, because whenever something good happens with Leeds, we play a gig. But I am a fan in the respect that I'm from there and the football team, but the rest of the band are mad for it.
Oh, really?
And I've done so many interviews with... I'll go on a radio show, and it'll be maybe in Japan or something, and they'll say, so you're a big fan of Leeds United, and I'm like, oh, read us here, and they'll say, so we've got a quiz for you, a Leeds United quiz, and then we're going to play a record, and during the record I go, just give me 8 out of 10 of the answers and we'll all look better for it, and then that's what I usually do. And then the questions are like, in 1978 who was the captain for the I have actually learned quite a lot about Leeds United, and I am very pleased they've gone up, but I don't know that much about it.
Was your dad into football when you were growing up?
No, that's the thing. He's only got into it since he retired, really.
So tell me a bit about your family life and your parents.
Yeah.
Your dad was he worked for the BBC.
He did work for the BBC.
Outside broadcast producer.
Yeah, he did that for years and years. He directed It's a Knockout. That's where he met my mum, who was the score girl on It's a Knockout.
Really?
Yeah.
So she was probably quite glam, was she?
She was a model, but not tall enough. Oh. She was only 5 foot something, small. But she wasn't tall enough to be, so she was a school girl on It's a Knockout. But the weirdest thing is, because I don't really talk about that much.
Yeah.
Because you talk about your parents, and in the early years when I got very famous, people would like knock on the door and ask for an interview. So, the weird thing is, now it's fine, but I'd read things where I go, so that's why he's famous. If he, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's like, so how would a man directing It's a Knockout be able to rig the charts so that I could, like, it's not like he could ring up Top of the Pops saying, remember me, it's Jeff, worked there 20 years ago. I need a favour.
Do you think there's also a bit of a lazy assumption about people that go into music that, do you know what I mean? They've got to have a sort of Oasis-type backstory.
Oh,
And yours was presumably, you know, a sort of relatively middle class, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, music's the only way out.
Yeah.
Well, it was. I mean, there was only one way out when I was a kid, but we lived in a cul-de-sac, so it was more literal. I don't know. I mean, it's changed now because there's some, like, poshos, aren't there?
That's true.
You know, there's been, recently it's... proper poshos and drama school kind of thing.
Yeah, Radiohead and Coldplay.
I think Oasis is probably one of the last ones, maybe the Arctic Monkeys. But even Alex's dad was in bands and stuff, so.
And were you quite a noisy extrovert family?
No. Not really. My brother's louder than me.
Is he?
Yeah. But readers, you've done so many today. Sorry about this. So embarrassing. On the way here, I thought, right, that's it, you're cleared out.
Redis is doing a poo.
Yeah. We don't have to comment on it, do we? Like, texture and...
This is an important part of dog ownership.
I know, but... see how swift that was.
He was quick, wasn't he, for a big lad?
I was talking about me with the bag.
I thought he was impressive for a big unit. No copy of the Sun. And were you and your bro close? Did you fight? I mean, all brothers do a bit, don't they?
No, not really. No, I mean, this is weird because you might listen to this, but not particularly close.
Yeah.
But then, not particularly the same. So, you know, I was just a bit quieter. And this isn't like a famous person saying, I was actually quite shy as a child. It's like, no, I just kind of enjoyed watching what was going on. And as a second child as well, you get the benefit of seeing the older one do everything wrong and see what it takes to not get things wrong. So yeah, you kind of just sit and watch and then learn from their mistakes, which is, well, thanks, James.
Were you popular at school, Ricky? What sort of gang were you in?
The same gang I am now, just me and Craig, who's my best friend from school.
Yeah.
And my best friend now, I think it was pretty much just me and him I broke my arm and he was put in charge of sitting with me at lunchtime in the classroom. And we've been friends ever since.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah. I love that.
He's now a seaweed harvester.
Yes, and are you involved in his business in some way?
Yeah, well, you know, I thought it was the future. And it still could be.
I read something and it was a teacher sort of slightly slamming you when you were showing off or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it was something about...
Enough of the cabaret, Mr. Wilson.
Oh.
That's the kind of... If I was a teacher, that's perfect, isn't it? Because it's kind of... It's not telling off, but it really puts you in a place where it embarrasses you. Those are the best insults.
The most awful thing a parent can say to you is stop showing off. The humiliation.
Oh, yeah. But then you realise you're showing off, which is awful.
Were you a show-off?
No, not particularly. I don't know. It's not the question to ask a person, is it? You need to ask the people that were there. And you might get a different response. I think that with me personally, I am a show-off. But it takes a form of... It's not an instant karma kind of show-off. It's a long-term revenge kind of show-off. Whereas I think to myself, like if my brother, who's excellent at singing, I thought probably at the time... I'll show you.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later,
yeah,
I showed him. But I don't think it's... We'll go
okay, this way?
Yeah, yeah. I think that I... Because I'm incredibly petty and hold grudges. some kids, got hold of my number and were ringing me all the time.
This is when you'd become famous?
Yeah. And ringing me in the middle of the night. And once they rang me at a party and it was the final straw because they're saying, you know, just singing songs down the phone and I didn't want to change my number.
Yeah.
But they hadn't withheld the number that time from his mobile phone. So I stored it in my phone, waited a couple of weeks. It was actually a landline. I'm getting to grips with the story. It's been a long time. And then I rang the phone and what I assume was his mum answered. And I said, I can't leave my name, but I'd like to say I have some on very strong authority that your son is into drugs. And I think you should probably search his bedroom. And they said, thank you, and I put the phone down. Now, I don't know what happened there, but she probably searched his room, probably found some porn, embarrassment. But that's the kind of petty grievance that I hold. So, yeah. But there is a weird thing with famous people, because you meet two types, and they're the ones that you like, and then the ones that really believe is real.
Yes.
And it makes them in some way different.
Yeah.
And I've met loads of those. But I heard Daisy May Cooper talking the other day, and she was saying that about going to the BAFTAs. She was really honest, saying how flat it felt, and it was all she ever dreamed of, but then it wasn't flat. I think that's just a thing of, you know, everything. Ambition is a moving target. It's always out of reach. You could say it's like fog, or you could say it's like a rainbow.
Yeah.
Depending on which, whether you're an optimist or a pessimist.
Which one are you?
Fog. Yeah. It might sound like I'm really out of breath, but I think that there must be some weird humidity in these woods.
Oh, you know what? It's so sweet. He's looking up at you really adoringly.
It's because I've got the treats. When Grace walks in, she never takes treats or a ball.
Oh, that's your other half, isn't it?
Yeah, and he has a miserable time. But with me, he's constantly at this bum bag. Yes, it's a bum bag.
So when did you know you were musical?
I was really lucky to be at the perfect age for Britpop. So, 17. Oh my God, Reeders, not again.
Reeders, good boy.
So, perfect age for Britpop.
Yeah.
Which was great for me, because not being sporty, you could get away with being attractive, but not being attractive, because that's what the, you know, like, I'm not dissing anyone, but you can see like Jarvis Cocker on TV and go, hang on, all the girls at school are swooning and writing his name on their bag.
Yeah.
But he doesn't look like, let's say, Peter Andre.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an exciting time to be a skinny indie kid. Because suddenly it turned the nerds into the cool kids.
Yes, that's true, actually.
Getting a bit of love.
That's all right.
Reeders is very jealous now. He usually gets all the attention.
Oh, what's this, Ricky?
These are the kids' school.
Oh.
It's a school for kids, but they're in the woods.
Oh, are they playing Let's Ruin the Podcast audio?
Yeah. They set up a little toilet for them as well, which I think is weird.
Really?
A tent.
Were you outdoorsy when you were a child?
Yes, I was, because we lived in a wood. Not like these kids, but our house was in some woods. So that was a great place to lose yourself in 6 foot of bracken and build swings and have the basically ideal childhood where all the time wanting to live in suburbia.
Really?
Oh God, you know, I see those, you know those when they build Barrett houses?
Yes.
And you think to yourself, I imagined living like, you know, I was in the Goonies or something with like leaving your bikes outside and having loads of kids around.
Yeah.
But, we moved to the woods and I had to kind of make my own fun. My brother was quite a little bit older, not a lot, 2 years, but he was quite technical, so he was always making radios and stuff like that.
Okay.
Come on, it's only a little bit
Come
further.
On. It's only a bit Can further. Can we go all the way to the playing field?
Or is that too far?
What's that? No!
Because you haven't seen it in ages.
Okay, let's...
But then I'm doing that thing which all people do. You know when you kind of... What's the word? Not anthropomorphise, but you project your feelings onto the dogs. So yeah. I'm there going, oh, he hasn't seen the playing field in ages. But I don't think he's thinking about that.
I always think that about Ray.
Right.
Always think, oh, he doesn't like that. How do I know?
Yeah.
He might be having the time of his life. So did you ever have a sort of hairbrush into the mirror moment as a kid where you would sing and think, oh, that sounds good, that voice?
No, I don't. I think the singing came after the decision I wanted to be a pop star. Well, I think it actually, when I was any good, came when I got the job on The Voice, because I thought I have to actually be good now. We have to sing every week with the other judges. But before that, if you're in a band, you can say, that's how I sing.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a good singer. You can just be the singer in the band, which is usually the person that's best at it. But yeah, there was a bit when I really wanted to just be in a band, because I thought, this is what all my heroes are doing. So that's what I want to do. And I'd go and see a lot of music. So I kind of wanted to do it for free. And I'd go to the festivals and I thought, be nicer to be playing the festivals. So,
but you went to university and you did a sort of, did you do art and design?
I did, yeah.
So was there a plan at some point to go down that route, or was that just, I want to do something creative and this seems like a good thing to do for 3 years?
Well, I was good at that, I suppose. You just do what you're good at. It's, everything always felt like a means to doing what I wanted to do. And then suddenly, when you start, because I got a job as a teacher then, and suddenly you start feeling the fact that what you're doing as a means to get to what you want to do is taking over from what you want to do. You kind of have to remember that you have to stay on focus.
Yes.
And I do really believe that you can make things happen by willing them on.
Yeah.
And
were you ambitious, Ricky?
Oh, yeah. I'm still too ambitious, over-ambitious. That's why being a pop star is a really... the worst thing about being a celebrity is you can't say how crap it is, right? But the worst thing about being a pop star is it's just about relative values of how dashed your hopes can be. Because when you're making a record, you don't think, hope this goes to number three. You think, hope it goes to number one, hope it's our biggest selling record of all time. But when it goes to number three, you're kind of like, well, that was a waste of 2 years. I have to do some talking to Readers now, sorry. Readers, danger. Concentrate. Readers, good boy. Okay, cross. Go on.
when you achieve those heights,
yeah,
anything after that, unless it's always, no one can sustain it, you know.
No.
Even Elvis. It's
well,
like, you
there
have...
is the argument, which I tell myself a lot, that if the graph of your band's success is just going up, then at some point it's going to be so devastating, the drop, that it's going to ruin your life, even though you've had an amazing success.
Yeah.
So if your graph is more like going up and down all the time, much like ours has, it's actually far more fulfilling in the long run, because we've had an extended journey. When I first met Brian, who I mentioned earlier, who was worried about my money, he said, plan for it to last no longer than 5 years. And I thought, screw you, Brian. and it has, it's been 16 so far. And now I think we can do it for as long as we want.
Well, I really loved your last album.
Thank you.
Was that slightly overwhelming though, the success of your initial success?
Well, I had nothing to compare it to. So yeah, I think it probably was overwhelming, but in the same way that you kind of, we were so busy. We didn't really notice, and we were having a really good time. I look at photographs and I've never seen five more tired looking people. We were just knackered. I'm still getting over it, but we were flying every day and we didn't really know how big it was because we were never in the right country that it was big in at the right time.
Yeah, except when people would shout, "I predict a riot," every time you walked through the street, presumably.
Well, we weren't even that recognisable because I didn't really wear the stripy blazers and stuff. You know, and you're only as recognisable as you want to be.
Do you think that's true?
Definitely. Because it's how you walk and hold yourself. And if you want to get recognised, you will. And if you don't want to get recognised, you won't.
I'm glad you didn't call your dog Ruby.
Oh, I know. I meet a lot of Rubies. Yeah, I do. And they're all...
You shout that in a North London playground, you get trampled in the rush. I think you were responsible. There's a whole...
We were. The year after, it was the top girl's name.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Isn't... At that point, everyone wanted a piece of you, and I think people's attitudes imperceptibly change, just that you walk into a room and there's a sense of, oh, he's here, because you're the talent now.
Yeah, but if you were, like... Hello.
Sure.
No, you can stroke the little one, though. I'm joking, you can stroke any dog you want. But I suppose that, you know, there is the old thing about if you're the most famous person there, then... No, you don't have to. No, I don't want pity strokes for the big dog. there you go. See, you're happy now, aren't you, readers?
Readers!
Yeah, I never was really in places where I was the most famous person there because it was all going on. And I just didn't really go out that much. We were never at parties or anything like that. And the people I've been friends with were so close to me, they knew it was not really that real.
Yeah.
So it was all right. I don't have an expensive car or anything. I've got a 2004 RAV4, Toyota RAV4, which would cost us £1,400.
Did you ever watch other people in your industry behaving, obviously no names mentioned, but and think, oh, I don't want to be like that, or?
Well, it's kind of weird because, like, you see, you know, when other people behave
In a kind of starry way.
Yeah,
or, no,
but it's kind of cool, and you think, wow, that looks exciting.
Yes.
But then you try it yourself, and it just makes you really anxious. Because, like, if you've been to a party and been, like, annoying, the next day you're just sitting in your flat thinking to yourself, oh, my God, is this going to be in the newspaper that I was a dick? And then it's not worth it.
To come up with music like that, which is catchy and... sort of anthemic as well, but has credibility as a piece of music, you know.
Well, there was a plan, and it seems fiendishly simple, which was we knew that we could only get 20 minutes before some bigger bands, but we knew we could get on before the bigger bands because we had...
You mean when you were gigging?
Yeah, because we had a club and we could, like, pull in favours, so we could get on the bills. But we only had 20 minutes, so... If we made songs that were... It sounds like you've just, like, bottled lightning. But we thought, right, so we have to make the people like the songs very quickly, right? Now, it seems like, why isn't everyone doing this? But everyone wasn't doing that. And so we were like going, okay, how do you do it? Well, you have a one-line chorus that you repeat four times. That works.
Yeah.
Okay. Before you start the song, you say the name of the song, which is the chorus, very clearly. Don't mumble it. So if it's I Predict a Riot, Nick said, you've got to go, I predict a riot. And then we'll play the song. So we do that. Say the name as much as possible. We're Kaiser Chiefs. This song's called I Predict a Riot. This song's called Oh My God. Right. And so people knew who we were. And it worked really well. Should we sit on this log?
Yeah, shall we sit down?
I used to sit on that log, but it's been taken.
I love a log.
We used to call it the dog log.
Oh, let's sit down here, Edith.
I had a whole gang of ladies that I used to meet here every morning.
Did you?
One had a pet squirrel. she found it, and then she nursed it back to health, and it lived in a hood.
So, Ricky, I'm really fascinated. Why don't more people do that? Approach music in the way that you did, which is...
simple.
Well, it's not... But it created brilliant music.
It was combined, that simplicity, with the fact that when we arrived, no matter how hard we tried to be cool, we're enjoying ourselves too much to be cool. Mm. So we'd arrive at somewhere like the NME Awards shows or the NME Awards or anything like that, and we'd just be having the time of our life. While everyone else was desperately trying to appear like they were didn't want to be there. But we were just like going, this is exactly where we wanted to be for years. And when we didn't get signed till we were 26. And then when you put that in perspective that like George Harrison was 26 when the Beatles ended, we were just so relieved that it was gonna happen. And it was happening. And it happened really quickly.
Yes, it felt like, it suddenly felt like I couldn't remember a time when you hadn't been around and those songs hadn't been part of my life. And they weren't just songs that you think, oh, do you know that song? I mean, they just became part of the sort of infrastructure of music in a sense, you know?
But we also had this kind of thing in our manifesto. It wasn't that long, and it changed a lot. Because at first it said, don't wear jeans, and then we started wearing jeans. Mm. But the song titles worked better when they can be used for a newspaper headline. And then you suddenly, because then they started to be used.
Did you really? That's so clever.
Even Everyday I Love Less and Less was used as a headline. Mm. And then you go, right, we've broken through that thing that bands need to break through, which is into the consciousness rather than just having a catchy tune. The other thing is you realise really quickly that it can disappear very quickly. I mean,
really?
we got that message, like, we went to the Brits and we nominated for 5 and won 3. Mm. And the next year we went and we were nominated for 3 and won none. Mm. And the next year we weren't invited. So you suddenly realise, right, you've got to do something about this. And you also realise the moment that Radio 1 decide they're not going to play a single is the moment they'll never play you again. And all these lessons you learn just kind of make you survive.
You used to get quite a lot of anxiety, didn't you?
Yeah, but I didn't realise. I mean, the thing is, it's weird because everyone has anxiety to a certain extent, but it just sometimes comes out sideways.
Mm.
But it's strange now that it's a bit like...
Hey.
I'm not being down on anxiety, right, or anyone that says they have it, because it can be really crippling. And some people can't leave the house. It was mild. Mm. But, you know, it's a bit like allergies. Now we're all allergic to something. But we weren't before, and I think before I was just like a bit nervy.
What?
But I think I constantly had stage fright for about 4 years.
Did you?
And it wasn't bad, because also you got to think about all these things. Is it's probably the reason it happened, because it was part of what I am. So if I wasn't like that, it wouldn't have been the same. And if it wasn't the same, it wouldn't have happened. So it's not, and don't worry about it as much. And also, a doc said to me that anxiety is just adults not being able to process excitement right. It's
exactly,
it's like, it's the same, it's like, you know, they say like we're only about a few DNA cells away from a banana. It's the same thing with anxiety, it's just excitement, just with not let out in the right way.
Well, some people would say that feeling nausea or even being sick or just feeling nerves before going onto a stage in front of, you know, an arena full of people
is normal.
Is a completely normal human response. And that there'd be something slightly sociopathic about you if you didn't feel it was odd.
And that's where you get a lot of sociopathic rock stars. But the But you do. I always think they're incredible, the way they walk. But even walking through a backstage area and you're walking past, like, the Kings of Leon dressing room, if you don't feel to yourself, oh my God, this is amazing, then you're weird. I saw James McAvoy in Sainsbury's the other day, and I nearly, like, I didn't know what to do with myself. It's weird, isn't it? And we saw Viggo Mortensen outside that bookshop that Snappy Snaps used to be in Crouch End. I get starstruck by anyone.
Do
it's
you?
Ridiculous.
I get excited. I think sometimes really minor celebrities really excite me. Do you know what I mean?
I love it when we've got a record coming out at the same time as the end of a series of Love Island. It's fantastic because they're on fucking everything. And then you get to meet them and you go, wow, they're so leathery.
I was jealous when you did The Voice because...
That was good.
Tom Jones said something about you, didn't he, in his book?
He said, did.
What did he say?
Nice bloke, no bullshit. I like that. Made me quite like myself that a little bit because I thought that's Tom Jones's take. I think that's good.
I think that's one of the nicest things that could be said about somebody. No bullshit.
Yeah.
Because it's about being authentic. And
I mean, it was in a world where we had to at times be less than authentic, but I think he saw the fact that I was good at that, but then put it to one side. You know, because we were doing TV at the end of the day. It was.
And did you, when you decided to do The Voice, again, that seems like, from what I'm learning about you, very consistent with your approach to work, which is right. Similarly, you were saying with I Predict Right, I know that's going to get some use. It's like keeping a presence, isn't it? And was The Voice part of that in a way?
Yeah, definitely, because I can't really do anything else apart from make records. And they can make it so that you're not allowed to do that anymore at the level you've been used to. You can always make records. Especially now, but there was an element. I mean, I've never said this to the band because I always said that I did it for the band, but I really wanted to do it because it was exciting and it kind of like was. It was like going on a ride where you're kind of like scared, but going, this could change my life for the worst, but I'll never know if I don't do it. And it was it was an incredible 3 years because I was super famous until literally the day after the last episode. And it's so weird, the difference between the paparazzi and everything like that. It's like an off and on switch. And if you're on The Voice, it's on. And the day after it was off. Mm. And it was amazing. That was hilarious. Like people going for my bins and stuff. And I loved it.
Did you?
Well, it was hilarious because all they would find out is that I'm not that good at recycling.
Because you were really honest about it. You were saying that I had to get my teeth done and lose weight because I was going on telly.
Oh no, you know something big is going to happen on TV with me if I start losing weight. It'd be like, because I can't be bothered otherwise.
You're pretty slim though. You're
well,
slim
I had a wedding coming up, but we cancelled it. We were supposed to get married in September, but we spoke to them, we could only have 30 people there. And the clincher was no church bells.
Are you going to have live music there?
At the wedding?
Yeah.
No. A DJ. I can't stand a band at a wedding. Why would you want to hire some people to make it all about them?
Have you ever been asked to play a wedding? You know, when I say wedding, like an oligarch's wedding or, you know.
Oh, I'd love to.
Dubai.
No. I'll tell you what, if there are any really rich people out there that want Kaiser, we will do anything behind closed doors for cash. We love it. The band, well, the thing is, I don't enjoy it that much because it's always a bit awkward, but the band can just put their head down and play.
Yeah.
We do lots of corporate things and they love them.
Yeah.
And I've started to enjoy it because it's different and I don't see it as like a, you know, encroaching on my artistry as I used to. Because I just thought, this is me now. I'm Mr. Saturday Night.
But, and were you happy with that?
Yeah, I was more than happy because I knew what I was doing. Because I'd spent most of my youth enjoying watching people do it on TV and sat in the audience because my mum would take me to things my dad was doing. Because he did that Barrymore's Saturday Night show. But, you know, we weren't TV kids. We were very quiet and polite. My brother was interested in the mechanics of it, and I was interested in Michael Barrymore's silly walks.
But I got to go to TV studios with my dad. Same thing. We'd go to Multicoloured Swap Shop.
Right, did you?
We went to the roadshow, and my dad, who was a bit of an intellectual because he did an arts programme, he was reading Ulysses when we watched Shawaddy Waddy at the Multicoloured Swap Shop roadshow. And I remember thinking, why can't you be like the other dads?
The worst thing my dad ever did was... No, it's the worst thing, I don't know. The worst thing he ever did, I probably don't know about. But he told me once that the feet at the end of the bill were him and my mum walking away. So I went to school and told someone this. And they rang him up And they said, can you come in and do a talk about it? And he had to say, no, it's not actually true. I'm not terrible.
A friend of mine at school, and what's brilliant is that because your dad worked in TV, obviously that was believable.
Yeah.
A friend of mine whose mum was the producer of Multicoloured Swap Shop.
Right.
He lied himself to everyone and said his mum was the woman at the beginning of Tales of the Unexpected.
Really?
You know, the naked woman who danced in flames.
Wow.
He carried it so far, he said, yeah, she doesn't like to talk about it, so don't mention it to her.
Clever.
Because
oh,
she had to be naked.
It's funny because I'm writing children's books now, and I know that all celebrities eventually...
Are you?
If you leave enough... It's like monkeys and typewriters. Enough celebrities and typewriters, and they'll write a children's book. But I've written a few. And one of them's being picked up, which is nice. But my first one I wrote was based on a true story, which was one Christmas, I went to the next... Since I've been famous, went to the next door neighbours and helped the little girl next door build a castle, a Cinderella castle thing she'd been given. And then when she went back to school, they said, what have you done over the holidays? And she said, Ricky Wilson came around and helped me build my Christmas present. And they accused her of lying. And then she had to do her homework again. And she said the same thing. And they said, no. And eventually her parents were called in. And her parents said, yeah, that did happen. And I'd love to have been there. No, yeah, he did come around. But one of my children's books is based on that. It's about a little boy who... amazing things keep happening to him, and he keeps having to go in school and tell them, and every time it gets more and more amazing and he keeps getting told off.
And what, you know, that Jerry Maguire thing, you know, makes me want to be a better man,
yeah.
Which people always say is kind of, I mean, it's schmaltzy, but that's the key to a good relationship, is that you want to be your kind of best self with someone.
Yeah.
Do you think that's true of you guys? How do you think she brings out the best in you?
Well, actually, lockdown's been really good. And it's been a really good test because suddenly you realise that you don't really need anything else. And
that's
I don't really need anything else. The dog, maybe, he's eating a stick. The dog and Grace, and I'm happy. And I could live anywhere.
Mm.
And it makes you think, you don't actually need that much more. And if we stop tomorrow, we could just go out to Menorca and live there. And eat bread every day and get really fat. I'm going to get enormous. When there's not a threat of TV anymore, I'm going to get enormous.
Does that inspire you to... Do you diet and things?
Yeah, I have to.
Why? What, are you naturally...
I think I'm naturally on the larger side, yeah.
Were you when you were younger?
Yeah. No, when I was a kid. Because my brother was a bit bigger than me and I wanted to do whatever he didn't do.
Mm.
So if he had sausages, I wanted fish fingers. And if he was a bit bigger than me, I wanted to be tiny. So I'd make myself the opposite of whatever he did. So, but yeah, I'd be bigger than him. I mean, I've lost about... nearly a stone and a half during lockdown. But I put on about a lot of that during lockdown. It was amazing. Toblerones. Why did no one tell me about Toblerones before? They're incredible.
No one told me. Well, you get the knock at the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, Ricky. We're here to discuss Toblerones with you.
Yeah.
But there's something about the presentation of the Toblerone, isn't there?
It's amazing. And it's so cosmopolitan. I know Ferrero Rocher likes to think itself as cosmopolitan, but they've got nothing on the Toblerone.
Ferrero Rocher, Schmoshe.
Yeah, I know, that's so nouveau riche.
It's so...
Toblerone is moneyed. You know, it's like, I imagine they have them in stately homes. 20 pieces in chocolate orange. You know these pub quizzes we've had to do during lockdown? Everyone was doing really crap questions, so I thought I'm going to make... I only had to do 10 questions. And one of them, I bought a chocolate orange and counted them as 20, which I think is a really odd number. It's not an odd number, but it's an odd... You'd think there'd be like 24 or something. The best bit of the chocolate orange is the middle bit.
Oh.
You know the bit that's not part of the segment? It's like a stalk.
The spine.
Yeah, the spine. That's
the spine
cool.
of the orange.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What I like is they've given a nod to the real orange spine.
Yeah.
It's so faithful, the representation.
Perfect packaging.
It's like a still life.
And as you're eating it, you can flatten out the orange bit on your sofa arm.
It's true.
What else have I been eating? I remember Daily Mail called me the jowly popster. And portly popster and jowly frontman. And then I thought, I've got to do something about that.
You didn't have I Predict a Diet?
Oh, of course, all the time.
Oh.
All the time. But, you know, it was that song that bought me all the food.
It made me fat. I kept you in chocolate oranges.
Yeah.
When Nick left,
yes.
Was there a set of the band? Was there a sense of, OK, we, you know... to calm down everyone, but is this going to be okay? Just because it was collaborative, wasn't it? And you all worked together.
Yeah, but no, because I think there was an element of, because it was happening for a year in leaving.
Yeah.
We decided a year before. So, and he was giving us time to put our affairs in order, which was gracious of him. But during that time, we went from being, it's going to be over, to being, like, encouraged.
Yeah.
And I was a bit, and then, because I'd been offered The Voice 2 years before.
Mm. Had you?
Yeah. And then Danny O'Donoghue did it. And then
I thought
to myself, well, now it's a good time as a bit of a turbo boost.
Mm.
And something that Nick would never have allowed. So it was kind of like, well, it's a new chapter. Let's start with a bang. And that was pretty nerve-wracking because not everyone in the band agreed.
Mm.
Rightly so. I mean, it was a gamble, but it paid off. Everything you've ever done is a gamble.
What do you think when you see young people wanting to be musicians, and if they said to you, right, I'm just going to focus on this and not do qualification, you know, this is my dream. And I know it's difficult because I think that's why The Voice was different, because it was literally focusing on their instrument, wasn't it? And it was focusing purely on their talent. But do you think that...
It's really tricky because I'd always be of the opinion, if you want to do it enough, go for it.
Mm.
And if you want to do it enough, it will happen before you give up.
Mm.
But most people give up because life gets in the way. And I think it's a kind of a madness that we had, that we thought, you know, record companies are coming to see us and saying we were too old, and we were 25.
Really?
Yeah. And we were damaged goods.
God.
Look at Raymond, made a new friend. He's quite an attractive man, actually. He was going to pick anyone in the park. Have you trained him to do that?
Raymond, he's just sat with the man. Yeah,
you've trained him.
Oh, shall I go over?
Yeah. Oh, my cute dog. So she's walking over now to the hot guy in the...
Come on, Raymond! Sorry.
And hoodie combo.
Sorry.
Oh, this whole thing.
Oh, no, look, he won't leave you. Raymond, come here, please.
Well-trained dog there.
What a charming man.
I know.
How can I put this? I don't think he's... I think he'd be more interested in you, Ricky.
Oh, right, okay.
I mean, I think everyone would be.
Likes blondes, then, yeah?
He was charming.
How lovely.
Come on, Ray.
I think Ray wants to pick it. Do you want me to carry Ray? No,
I'll
he's
I'll take
fine.
Him.
He's
you come here. I'm going to carry you. Come here. Ricky, I want to talk about your podcast because I really love it. And do you want to talk people through it? Because it's a brilliant idea.
So I met Tony Blackburn when I was... I've met him a few times, but when I got to know him was when I was standing in for Dermot O'Leary quite a lot on Radio 2.
Mm.
And there's a point where you have to do a handover. When I'd go into Tony's studio in the morning and Saturday mornings, we had a show about the 60s, and talk to him about what was on the Dermot O'Leary show.
Mm.
And I enjoyed that intensely, because it was always really funny, and I'd always kind of, we'd always take the mickey out of each other, and he seemed to really enjoy it. And the first joke we ever made together was we were talking about Love Island, and he said, oh, they wouldn't have me on this year. And I said something about too many STDs, and he said, no, not enough tattoos. And I thought, we're going to get on really well.
Yeah.
And then when, like every celebrity is nowadays, approached to do a podcast, I thought to myself, how do you get out of this? And I said, I'll only do it if Tony Blackburn will do it with me. And I didn't think they were going to ask him. And they asked him, and he said, yeah, definitely do it. So we were stuck with each other, which is great. And then I came up with the idea, which is basically just based on the kind of podcast I like to listen to, which is crime, true crime. I like the crime aspect. And then, because Tony's been in the pop world since it was invented, before it was invented. And I've been involved. So pop myths is something that everyone loves telling each other. You know, did Marilyn Manson have some ribs removed so he could pleasure himself easier?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So we started doing about pop myths, and I liked the idea of dressing up, as did Tony, as two detectives. And it's not really about the pop myths. It's just about talking to Tony Blackburn about stuff he doesn't get to say on the radio. And we have two guests on a show, and I'm dead interested in them.
Mm.
And even more so, which is a great way to work, because I do no research at all. And then, so you're you're asking questions because you're actually interested and not off a list of questions.
Yeah.
Which is quite good because they just pop in there. And then Tony will come in from a side angle and ask them if they've, you know, usually if they'd like Twiglets. And he's desperate to be sponsored by Twiglets, but they haven't come knocking. Because he says they're really hard to get hold of and he can only get them from a petrol station, which is near his house. And no, not even near his house, he has to drive to it.
Oh, well, it's
he gets crumbs all down his medallion.
You're a very versatile man, aren't you?
I've thought about this a lot, which is that I do struggle with a lot of things doing it, but that's probably why I want to do it. Mm. And I have to really wind, even before the podcast, I've really wind myself up into doing it because I'm nervous. And then I do it. And I can't say I enjoy doing it, but I love having done it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's being in Kai's Shoes has afforded me the ability to, like, do anything I want to, really.
As we were saying, that's quite unnatural, being on a stage in an arena, at the level that you've experienced.
Yeah.
Most people don't know what that's like. And, you know, there's that cliche about the rock star, I came home, you know, I was made love to however many thousand people, I came home alone. But is that a process of adjustment or?
Not really. Probably used to be. You make excuses, especially when you start thinking about, like, you know, when you say, well, I need to have a drink because of the adrenaline.
Mm.
And then you realise years later, you don't, right? And then stuff like that. And also half the fun of it was coming home afterwards. I mean, it's like once we were supporting U2 in Amsterdam and we were back at the pub in Leeds before closing. Mm. And that was half the fun, to see if we could do it. And then the landlord said, where have you been tonight? Supporting U2 in Amsterdam. And that was better than supporting U2 in Amsterdam, being able to say that to your local landlord.
But then I think you as a band, there was always a slight tongue-in-cheek element to your music, and it always made me smile, do you know what I mean, rather than want to go and hit someone. but it was still, like I say, credible music and is credible music. So I wonder, it just seems like you guys had a different attitude maybe to some
people. Yeah, I think that also, it's like, you know, when you can tell people how many books you've read without telling them how many books you've read. Same with politics. It's like, you know,
is that brilliant?
I get asked quite a lot about, like, who do you support? And I'm like, you don't really have to ask me, do you? You know what I mean? It's like, do you want me to just come out
what
and
do you think?
Jump to wear a rosette? Because I'm not gonna. Because, like, literally half my supporters don't agree with me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so, and I don't, and that's not, I'm not what I'm for. And then you get into an interesting debate about if you have a profile, you should be using it for good.
Mm.
But a lot of the time, and I do agree with that, but a lot of the time you think to yourself, it would be just annoying.
Do you drink still? Are you teetotal or do you have the odd drink?
This is really, a weird thing. You're not really a drinker. No, well, I haven't drunk in nearly 8 months.
Oh, really?
But I will drink again.
Mm.
It's not like a... But because I want to. And the reason I haven't drunk for 8 months is because I don't want to be one of those people that can never do it. And, you know, it gets close at times to being one of those people. And I don't want to live the
rest. What do you mean?
Just one of those people that can't do it again and can't be surrounded by people that do. And everyone's aware of that, and it's a problem. And I think it's an odd thing that my embarrassment would stop me from doing that.
Do you think, was it though for you?
I'd say 9 out of 10 people in bands it's a problem for, easily. Because it's part of it.
Yeah.
And widely encouraged, and wildly as well. And they, you know, it's fun. But you don't want to lose that. I don't know, it's a really odd one. And I've thought about it a lot.
Mm.
And it's been quite good lockdown without that. And it doesn't make me worry about people. Because I can see it happening to me and I can see it happening to other people.
Just when it becomes...
It's like anything can become a habit.
Yeah.
Anything. And it's really crap when it becomes a habit because it stops being something that you enjoy.
What do you think of therapy? I'm always interested in people's views on it.
I've tried everything. But and the thing that It's that thing nowadays when you hear people talking and you're just like going, oh God, therapy. Stop using what you've heard. Can't you just change it and say it out of your mouth in a way that like doesn't sound like you've been to therapy as much?
Yeah.
Because it's a good thing for lots of people. I couldn't get my head around how much it costs. So that's what I didn't like. And if you're sitting there thinking to yourself about how much money it's costing, you're not in the right place. Do you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
So it's not, some people really enjoy it. I know people that love it, look forward to it. I thought of it as like a big interview. Not that I'm, I didn't think about this, you know, but you know, like, but you know what I mean? I thought about it as like a double maths.
Really?
Yeah.
How are you on talking about emotions?
Rubbish.
Are you?
Hmm. But then, as long as I'm okay with that, then...
Do you cry, though?
Oh, God, yeah.
Do you?
Oh, man, big fish. I saw that the other day, and I couldn't stop. And I was generally upset, like, shaking.
You seem very, quite a calm person. I can't imagine you getting angry at that.
No, I don't get angry.
No,
that's been one of my main problems throughout my whole life. Never get angry.
Why is it a problem?
Because I bottle it up and, you know, I talked about being petty. It goes back to that. But it's, I just learned from a very early age it got nothing done. And there are better ways around it. But that makes you manipulative and that makes you not a nice person.
It has to come out, so sometimes you just have to rely on passive aggression. I do that sometimes, yeah. Without meaning to.
Yeah.
You just think, well...
Passive aggression is a bit like the offside rule. I don't really understand it or when I'm doing it. You know, yeah. It's a weird thing.
Here's my sexist joke. I bet a woman knows how to explain that, though. but are you a sulker?
Oh yeah, that's another problem. The thing is, all these things have come out in lockdown, but it's really good because lockdown's been great for that. Because you suddenly realise we can live through anything, me and Grace. It's fantastic. But sulking, like, I'm not over things for days, whereas she is over things very quickly. But yes, sulker, grudges, all of that jazz, I enjoy. But I think I enjoy it. I'm a wallower rather than a.
But then you're probably very well suited for that reason, because it's that yin and yang thing, isn't it? Where you can't have two sulkers.
No, it's good.
But you can't have, but equally, I think if you've got two, lay it all on the table, that's all you're doing.
Hmm. Read us.
Let's cross here. You're very punctual, aren't you? Because I noticed you were like super early and is that a big thing for you, punctuality?
Yes, definitely. I love it.
So here we go. Here's I want a Ricky situation.
Yeah.
If someone was kept you waiting, let's say I'd been 15 minutes late today.
I wouldn't have minded.
No, but let's say you had to be somewhere exactly an hour later and you were a bit pissed off with me.
Yeah.
Would you not have said anything? Would you have said,
I wouldn't have said that. I might have said I have to leave at a certain time.
Yeah.
But no, because it's not your problem. It's my problem for being petty. and what's the word that everyone in the band calls me? I can't remember. But I get wound up by things like that. Well, we have a band member called Peanut who's always late.
Mm.
And in many ways, I'm jealous of him. Because it doesn't actually mean anything. It doesn't actually matter. It's just time. And, you know, learn to live with that. I don't understand why he can't be on time. But he can't.
I'm usually late.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and you know what?
Well, Grace is usually late.
But Grace is in fashion, though. But I think the difficulty I find with it is that you're always making excuses and you feel your status is lowered. When I say status, I just mean you're not arriving as equals because you're starting on an apologetic front.
Okay, well, don't be late, then.
I think they're a bit excited, Ricky. The baseball cap didn't work.
The baseball cap is the worst disguise in the world.
They were looking back and giggling.
Aww. Sometimes if you wear a baseball cap and sunglasses, you just look like... You know, like George Michael always wore a disguise?
Yes.
To the point where you saw someone in baseball cap and sunglasses, you'd say, oh, look, it's George Michael. And then 9 out of 10 times it would be. But, like, especially around here.
Oh, poor, yeah, well, this was George's manor.
Yeah, it was. Stomping ground.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg told me to move to Crouch End. And as soon as I did, he moved out.
Yeah, Simon Pegg was North London, wasn't he? I wonder why people come here. I suppose it just feels...
Well, I came here because I wanted a garden. That was it. And you can't afford a garden in Primrose Hill.
Yeah.
I did love living in Primrose Hill, though. I used to, like, stride out of my door every morning feeling like I'd really made it. I left because A, I wanted a garden, and B, one day I needed pine nuts for a recipe, and they were £8. £8! I called the police.
So Kaiser Chiefs stuff has had to go, like your live stuff's had to go on hold. Is it?
Yeah, that's
fine. You going to be touring next year though? Are you going to be doing gigs next year?
Yeah, I mean, we've shifted most of it from this year to next year.
Yeah.
And I wanted next year off to concentrate on my children's books. But I haven't got next year off now, but then you just realise...
That's so exciting for you. When are they coming out then?
I don't know. I mean, I'm still... It's with two publishers at the moment.
Mm.
One of them says... no one makes decisions, do they? and it's weird, it's so odd, because about a month ago I was really excited, and now it's been a month and I'm not excited anymore, and that's disappointing, because I really enjoyed that excitement period. I felt like I was getting signed again.
Really? But then you're quite, I think, forgive the, this isn't therapy speak, because it's more, but you're quite type A, I think, like you like things done. Turn up on time, I want it done.
Well, no, yeah, well, I'd like an answer, yes or no. I don't want to have to wait for a no or a yes. Mm. I prefer it to be an answer today. Than continuous maybes.
Yeah.
Because then I can move on.
Redis is a good name. So where's Redis from again?
Well, this is the thing. It was going to be either... There's two actors that Grace likes. Tom Hardy.
Mm.
Or Norman Redis. And Norman Redis is in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And then it was either call him Tom Hardy, which would mean he'd be either Tom or Hardy. And I didn't want to shout Hardy in the park. So it was called Norman Redis for the first kind of day, and then he just shortened it to Redis. He's quite a hunky man, with a gravelly voice.
Oh, but you know, it just suits him so well.
It's quite regal.
He is very regal.
Well, now we've shaved him, because sometimes he's a big fluff ball, but we spent... God, if there's any money that you think you're going to save by doing your own dog grooming, don't.
No, I mean, can you imagine with Ray, it was a disaster.
It took 4 hours. And he was a big fluffy bum. We shaved him and then we couldn't get it to work, so we had to take everything off. And he was like a whippet.
And that's a two-person job, isn't it?
So he looks good now because it's growing back.
Your folks are still with us?
Yes, they are. They live...
They must have been so proud of you, Ricky. God, imagine.
Definitely. I think mostly because, I set my mind to it. And also, I did things before because, I became a teacher because I thought... I was just trying to prolong the wait until getting the rock star career on them. Yeah, yeah. You know, I was a teacher, but I had rock star them to fall back on. I think with anything, if you have kids, I think whatever they want to do, you've got to support it somewhat. You know, they were supportive.
If you ever had kids, what would you say if they wanted to?
I wouldn't
to
want them to be famous.
Would you not? Why not?
Because fame is just the detritus of doing something that lots of people like. And I suppose if you're doing something that's aimed at lots of people, then it's inevitable. I mean, it's weird because, the coolest thing we've ever done has been play... to massive amounts of people, no matter who they are, because it's just it's what we wanted. We didn't want to be in a band with a small following, because that wasn't in any way aspirational around the time we were getting into bands.
Mm.
And I don't think it really is, even for the people that say it is. So it's really weird to be labelled, not that we have been really, selling out, because who are you selling out to? If anything, you're using other people to get what you want.
Mm.
So you're buying in.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was never a problem for us to be massively popular, because it was always pretty much, it proved we'd done it right.
But also, the whole concept of selling out, to me, is a bit redundant, because selling out of what? Because I felt with Kaiser Chiefs, why I loved and love you, is because I felt you were opting out of that whole game, because it was funny, your music. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You were never serious about
Yeah.
We weren't reluctant rock stars, but or aren't reluctant rock stars, but I think there was that sense of this is all a bit of a joke, isn't it? Let's go
yeah.
for it.
You know? And also, yeah, you're right about selling acts become redundant, because by its very nature, it means that you're giving something of yourself for, let's say, financial gain, but giving it away for someone else to use for their gain.
Yeah.
But it's like, it was such a mutual beneficial thing for anything we did. It was helping us, so it's not really selling out. Selling out implies that you're taking away from it, but everything we did added to it. So I was offered an advert for chips, right, oven chips, right? And it was a glorious amount of money, right? More than the voice would have paid me for another 3 series. And at the time I thought, well, I really want the money, but this actually might prevent me from doing things I'd really like to do in the future.
Mm.
So I didn't do it. And that would have been selling out, because it wouldn't have been beneficial. So I think that selling out's a weird thing, because it kind of, to me, all that I would have got was money.
You created music and still create music, which is brilliant, and people love it, and that's really what it's about.
We recorded a version of We Are the Champions for Leeds United yesterday over Zoom. And then I sang it, and I was going, well, it's Freddie Mercury, but I can sing it, I've got the range. And I did it, and then I was like, it could be anyone in musical theatre singing that. No one could tell that's me. But if you listen to Chris Martin, you go, that's Chris Martin. That's what sold them. You know,
Freddie Mercury is always a tough... I mean, that was a range, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm actually pretty good at singing, though.
Your voice is beautiful, though.
Well, because I don't think it gets the recognition it deserves.
Well, I'm recognising it. I've commented on several times.
All right. Well, I did actually try really hard when I got the voice job. Really hard. I suddenly thought to myself, I have to really pick this up. And it worked. I had lessons and everything.
Did you?
Yeah. And then it's got a lot better. But I gave myself such a headache doing We Are the Champions yesterday. I was seeing spots. Like, it was like a trauma. I thought, no wonder they, like, in the old days, they were lucky because, like, they had to, like, travel to the next place and there wasn't, like, EasyJet or anything like that. And nowadays, we can do, like, 4 gigs a weekend, but they'd like to 2 a week. But they couldn't have done more because we must have been exhausted.
And also, you're a proper band, so you can't do... Also, wouldn't you be worried about turning up at a venue and saying, have you got any auto-tune?
Oh, right,
yeah. Because they say, it's the
Kaiser Chiefs. I have been around some bands that have, like... extra people under the stage holding notes.
Really? Yeah.
Well, if I could afford it, I'd do it. No, it's true. If we could afford the crew to do that, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that'd be fantastic. And just prance around all day. We turned up at TV and they go, you're miming. I'd be like, yes, amazing, miming, fantastic. And then you'd hear things about people going to self-boxes saying, you've got a mime, and being like, no, we're not miming. I'd be like, you're an idiot. It's amazing.
Yeah, but the shame when you get discovered.
Most of the time now, and the rest of the band won't mind me saying this, it's always just vocal to track.
Right.
So they can turn up and just hire a load of instruments and play them. And I have to sing it. And then it's a right doss for them. It's really hard for me.
But that's the thing, the front man, he gets more of the attention, which is true in your case, but then he's got, it kind of rests or falls on his, you know, you get the flack if it doesn't.
Yeah, but we're a little, I mean, in our case, I'm not sure they want the attention. Readers, concentrate. They get just enough to get some money off at B&Q and stuff, but not the kind of, like... I think they'd hate the other side of it.
Yeah, but the chips ads, come on.
We did... The thing is, that happened at the same time that we got an offer to do an ad for Yorkshire Tea. And I didn't want to do it, because I just think to myself, I didn't want to do an advert. But then the rest of the band really wanted to do it, so I said, oh, let's do it then. And then the amount we got paid for that was... I mean, hardly anything. But, and all, and I couldn't tell them that I'd previously been offered this amount of money for chips, right? Also, I'd just done a thing about fitness for kids at school, because on the back of the voice I was doing everything. So I can't go from fitness for kids to chips. It's just that he's selling out. So we did the tea advert, and I was like, oh my God, I've just done an advert. And the people at the chips company must be like scratching their heads. Going, how come we didn't want our money? Which was a lot. And believe me, I eat a lot more chips than I drink tea.
Coming this way.
See, when you let him off, he doesn't want to go anywhere.
It's like it. Regis has just gone bounding to my front door. It's like he owns the place.
Can he go in?
Of course
he will go in.
He's fine. No, I'm getting you a treat, Regis. Leave it. We're just outside my front door and I'm going to give Edith a treat.
Desperate to go in.
All right, let's get you a treat. Ray is... Raiders.
Oh!
Piggy. Straight to the bowl. Raiders. Look at their faces.
God, I haven't seen...
Right, we'll give him his
treat. I haven't seen Ray's eyes are opening all day.
I know, it's food. He's got a real eating issue. Right, let's give you your treats.
Raiders, sit.
Dad, you give your Raiders his treat and I'll give Ray
Raiders.
His.
Good boy.
Ray.
Will Ray take it off to a special place?
Does Raiders do that?
No. He's desperate to get it in there.
Oh, I love him.
Do you know what he did the other day?
Go on.
Which I think is quite clever. He was in bed and in the night, I got up in the morning and he was on the sofa, which he'd never done before. And then I went to his bed and he'd been sick in his bed. So he'd been sick in his bed and then he'd gone and lay on the sofa.
Yeah.
So I cleaned up the sick and thought, oh, well, that's quite clever of him. He's obviously, oh, I don't want to sleep there. The next night, sent him to bed, he went to bed. In the morning, he sat on the sofa, but he's not been sick. And he's suddenly gone, I went and sat on the sofa and nothing happened. And it was much better. So he learnt just from trial and error.
Jesus.
It's gone. It's gone, Raiders.
Ricky, I love your dog and I think you're fabulous.
Thank you.
I appreciate it's a bit unprofessional to say this.
I don't make for a good podcast though, do I? I didn't really give anything away. There's no kind of revelation. It's a bit boring. Sorry. I'm not going to win any awards.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that, and do remember to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.